24th, 2005. We have a couple of items on the agenda today, the Department of Higher Education and the Oregon Health Sciences University. First thing is I will open the hearing on SB 5513. In accordance with our normal discussions the last couple of days, particularly in these areas where when we looked at the ratings that members gave things, they generally, we have a lot of ties. So we'll go through generally the discussion about whether or not we want to change any of the ties and put them in any order. Mr. Bender, why don't you go through the first four items, and I think we should note also that we have another handout here that actually gives you more of a brief description of what each one of those items are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, as the Chair was indicating, the table that you have before you identifies how the programs were ranked based upon the ratings that you submitted, the rating sheets. What we did was we took an average of all of your ratings for each of these programs, and then we ordered them. Some people did have some express some changes from what they had actually submitted, but we made those changes. We then ordered the programs with the lowest rating, average rating first in order. And then we took those that had the same average. A number of programs would come in with identical averages, and we gave them the same ranking. So the top four items all came in with identical rankings and identical average ranking. And those are undergraduate education, debt service, and engineering. As the chair noted, higher ed was kind enough to provide this description of these various programs for you, but I can do that for you as well. These are actually the funding amounts that you see here are the amounts that are distributed to campuses, or in some cases maintained centrally at the chancellor's office and through other multiple arrangements between campuses for their actions for these particular activities that are going on in the Oregon University system. So these do not necessarily reflect the exact expenditures for these various programs. But undergraduate education, the $286 million there, are the funds that campuses are receiving based on their enrollment of undergraduate students, primarily Oregon resident students. In some cases, for master's students, there are some funds that are available for students that are not Oregon residents. But graduate education is enrollment in programs leading toward a graduate degree, and debt service is debt service on Article 11G bonds and lottery bonds that were approved in prior biennia for capital construction projects. The engineering item there does not represent all of the expenditures that are being spent on engineering programs in Oregon University System campuses. Those are the additional funding that engineering programs receive above the amount that they otherwise would receive just based on the student counts. So this is the excess funding, if you will, for engineering programs. All of these you ranked this at the same level, and for it was your highest rating of programs. So those came in first.
You're all in agreement.
If there aren't any questions, I'll go on.
Is there any dissension from that rating, or does anyone want to make a case that the rating should be different? For the sake of consistency, although they'll all be listed as one because we've done this on everything else, could the you have any objection to listing the first one as debt service?
No.
Acknowledge. Okay, the next item, Mr. Bender.
The next item, which received a unique average ranking, was the funding the request for an additional $2.2 million in general fund to support a K-12 data system that would facilitate the transfer of information on high school courses and performance to higher ed institutions, and also to facilitate transfers from community colleges' information on students to higher ed. This is a new program. It's outside of the base budget, and this received the second highest average rating.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
In relationship to this data system, will this data system allow or facilitate for joint or dual enrollment between a community college and a four-year university?
I do not know if it might benefit that. I think clearly one of the purposes of this is that obviously the committee has seen this item both in the Department of Ed budget, the community college workforce development budget, and now in the OUS budget. And what this actually allows us to do is answer some of those questions about not just in general how Oregon high school students do in college and do in higher ed and community colleges, but how specific students do. So we can actually chart a student's progress throughout their entire PK through 20. But I would think it might have some benefits that you reference also, because they would be aware of, I mean, on this system you would be, obviously you'd have information if the student was simultaneously attending a college and a university, and it probably would be easier for parties to check to see what I'm trying to search for words here, Representative Jensen, but to know a student's progress at both institutions.
I think, I understand, that portion of the data system, I think. Kind of in general, but one of the sometimes desirable outcomes of having a university and a community college located somewhere in the same general area is the possibility of dual type of enrollments, and I'm curious whether this integrates in some way or another into facilitating those dual enrollments, or if that's a different piece of software, if that software only exists in a few places where the university and the community college, a university and a community college, have worked out an agreement.
I see what you're referencing. So a student, it looks like a sort of a one-stop shopping.
Right.
They go and register at both institutions at one location.
And may subsequently take courses at both institutions at the same time.
I don't know if we have a response from the chancellor or not.
Good morning, Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen. For the record, George Pernsteiner, Acting Chancellor of Oregon University System. This particular item actually does not pertain to dual enrollment. It, in fact, does, as the chair suggests, allow the tracking of student progress throughout K through 20, if you will. In terms of dual enrollment, there are two different patterns that I think ought to be mentioned. The first is the formal dual enrollment agreements, which are linked majors, which allow students to enroll at both institutions and make progress toward a degree in a very organized fashion. We have 23 or 24 of those agreements right now between the various universities and the community colleges. The second is really something that you see mostly in the metropolitan area, where the students enroll in various institutions at the same time. And as President Bernstein mentioned last week, they now have a system, if you will, that allows the students to log on and see what the courses are at every one of the institutions in the metro area, and see which ones count toward the degree and what times they're offered and where they're offered, and essentially be able to pick and choose. That's not a dual enrollment agreement. It's a co-enrollment, if you will, but it is clear then to the student how to make progress at each of about four institutions in order to get toward a degree. So we have those formal dual enrollment ones, which are linked agreements that are very specific to a major between, say, Lynn Benton and Oregon State. And then we have the other pattern of enrollment, which is facilitated by a different data system that PSU has put in, that we're thinking about putting in both system-wide and OUS, and hoping the community colleges also join in. So I don't know if that's clear, but there's two different kind of patterns.
I understand that, Chancellor. Appreciate it. I was looking for whether there was specifically some software that is in the make to facilitate these types of interactions as far as students in community colleges, universities are concerned. And apparently it's kind of on an ad hoc basis now, as each individual institution or community college deals with.
What we're, Chair Devlin and Representative Jensen, what we're trying to do is to put in a system-wide or a statewide system, if you will, for the articulated transfer linked audit system is what it's called, but it's based on that PSU software. And we are, U of O has now installed it, and the other campuses are getting ready to do so as well, in order that we can in fact do what you're talking about statewide.
Thank you for the indulgence, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the answer.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Senator Gordley, then Representative Wisnant.
I think Representative Wisnant had his hand up.
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had one question about the K-16, but, Mr. Chair, I'm terribly disappointed in this ratings that we've produced here. When you got the department saying something's ranked 20th and we rank it third, when the department says it's 8 and we rank it 2nd, something's wrong here. I don't think this reflects a good prioritization, and I will not vote to support this prioritization.
Okay. Although, as indicated, Representative Wisnant, we will not actually be voting, but I will note for the co-chairs your disappointment and your belief that this prioritization is not appropriate.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Senator Gorland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question about the K-16 data system. What is the reason for not including or not starting with pre-K? Again, our goal is the creation of a seamless educational system, pre-K through 20.
Senator Gordley, I believe we can answer that question next week very clearly. We will have the Department of Ed back before us, and pre-K is actually part of there. And I don't think that that's particularly a huge task, in the sense that what's probably more complicated than I think, but the earliest childhood education, the 0 through 2, may be a little bit more difficult, but the actual pre-K Head Start is about 8,000 students, 7 or 8,000 students at our current coverage. It could be more. But I don't see a difficulty in terms of actually incorporating that data, at least find some data in terms of how a student is doing.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and members, the particular request here for higher ed is actually to assist in transferring particular data to them that is of assistance to them in both their admissions and their counseling activities. So they're really not requesting a system that will provide necessarily all of the data that may be available they're just asking for a particular the ability to be able to transfer information that will be especially useful to them. So they are this system would help in the transfer of information on, for example, high school assessment scores that the student has achieved, as well as transcripts of programs and courses that have been completed. I think that work that the student has done at an earlier age, though there's definitely interest in getting that information, isn't really as useful for higher ed, and they're looking for information that comes more closer to the student's enrollment in higher ed.
That leads me to ask a related question. If we wanted to know how students, Oregon students, who start their educational experience in pre-K forward, how they're doing, what's our method of tracking over a period of time?
I would ask if there's disagreement by the department to comment, but my understanding is that this particular request would really not assist you in getting answers to that question.
Okay.
But at the same time, Mr. Bender, isn't it true that this is sort of the information that the university systems needs will be provided to them, but in terms of PK-12, the information that Senator Gordley is referring to is really more of the information that they want to have available. And this is sort of a jointly funded project, just with different players needing different components of it. Clearly, I think the intent of the Department of Ed is to be able to track the progress of specific students as opposed to entire classes of students, so that they can see that if a student was doing well in fifth grade and they're not doing well in eighth grade, that there's some indication that there are some issues that need to be addressed there.
I'm just trying to figure out how our systems are linked. If we wanted to do a longitudinal study, where's the linkage?
I think, Senator Gordley, I will try to get you those answers in phase two. We can get Mr. Bender to get those answers. I'm wondering if this is going to be one of those items, and I want to assure anyone that actually I'm subliminally thinking there might be some people here thinking that somehow this data is going to be widely available on individual students. It is not. There are so many protections in law on who can have access to the data, and I have to sign virtually every year to be able to even help my own son at Linfield in terms of seeing what his financial status is in terms of if he's paying his bills. and I have to get his permission to do that. But the question you asked, I think we can get an answer for, particularly with the Department of Education, and we will get that answer. But I was wondering, this may be one of those areas, too, in terms of if you're talking about studies and things of that nature, there are a lot of items where, in broad perspective, the Department of Ed publishes data. But if you want to go in and see actually the raw data that they have, which many researchers actually come in and look at, they have an enormous amount of data. In fact, they have probably more data than any other state agency imagines.
And I guess my point is just that if we're talking about system,
yeah,
then don't we want the system and the data that we're talking about to start at the beginning?
Yes.
The beginning being pre-K and go through 20.
Yes.
I'm just trying to understand why it's basic.
Okay. We will try to get that answer for you.
Thank you.
Any objections to moving on to the next item? Education General Non-Limited. Do we have an explanation for what this is?
I can give you an explanation,
yes.
Education General Non-Limited. Non-Limited refers to the fact that in the budget you have not traditionally indicated a limitation on how many of these dollars can be spent. Essentially, all of the dollars that are available to higher ed in this program, they are allowed to spend under the state budget. It includes a number of items, and I'll just indicate what some of these items are. It includes the research grants that faculty receive. It includes student aid payments and student loan payments that flow through university budgets. It includes interest on bonds, Article 11 F1 bonds, and on COPs. These are bonds that the universities, that are issued by the state on behalf of the universities, but which the universities pay for the debt service out of their own budgets as opposed to being paid for out of general fund. And there are certain other items, smaller items in here, including sales, some certain designated operations or service departments. For example, if one department of an institution will pay for printing services from the printing services of the institution, those types of expenditures are shown here, are included as non-limited, and the state does not typically limit these type of expenditures. The next item...
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Sorry. I'd like to revisit the question that and the concern that Representative Wisnot raised. I'm wondering why we do see such a variance in the ranking. Can we unpack that one a bit?
I think in general why you see such a difference is merely how many members of the committee rank that either a number one or a number two. That's literally why you see it as that ranking.
That's pretty obvious, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to unpack the why. What were we thinking?
I can't actually tell what each member is thinking, but...
Yeah.
Sir,
yes.
It just looked to me like there was no general fund in that whole thing. I mean, that's what
mm-hmm.
I looked at. Yeah. Maybe that wasn't a good enough reason.
Mm-hmm.
It struck me as something that we were going to have a lot to say about, so and that's probably not an answer.
It helps. Well,
I've misplaced my ranking sheet, so I think it's in my black notebook. So I don't know why I voted the way I voted.
But
that's a good answer, Senator.
Well,
I mean, it looked like things that we couldn't.
It is actually not an item that we will probably in any way impact, to be honest, in our deliberations.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I just think, again, you know, when I did my ratings, because we were told not to even rate the ones that, except that didn't have any general funds or lottery funds, I didn't rate those. I only rated 1 through 3. I didn't rate any fives. But I think we're not helping the co-chairs and we're not helping us as we get into the tough work we're going to have when you've got something that the department ranks 6 and we rank actually 2019th if you count the numbers down, or if the department marked it 16th and we're going to that's pretty close, but the main thing is that 10 and 20, we're not helping us or the co-chairs if we have a rating. And I know it's a lot of work, yeah. Mr. Bender, but I know some of the committees, when you put a range, you know, 1 to 3 or, you know, and things like that, but I think the one, you know, the 1 to 5, we maybe, because I don't, did anyone give a 5? Did anyone, you know, everyone's read, yes. Higher ed, so did anyone rate a 5 other than my friend who probably did Cascade 5? No, he said 3.
I gave out a couple of 5s, Representative Wisnot.
But actually,
Mr. Chair, we were asked to rank the other funds. We were asked
right.
to rank everything.
And so,
original.
I think that.
Not the original struggles.
You have something happening here. You have a difference in understanding
right.
of instructions.
Right.
So we need to talk about that.
Well, I think that's actually, there's a difference in understanding of instructions. What would have happened in that particular case is that Mr. Bender would have only averaged the rankings from those parties that actually had marked that item. So that if five people had marked that item, you know, as a one, and three people had not marked it, he would have simply divided the five by five. The issue that we have now, and I have to stress this with the committee, is that we have to decide this today. This is the only day we have to decide anything on this particular ranking. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. I would ask then that maybe we get the that we just keep this like we are. We have the department's ranking and we have our ranking. We go into negotiations. And I know this is a learning process, and we're there's yeah. things that we can make it better, and I appreciate that and support it. But it disturbs me when Cascade Campus was sixth by the department, but it comes out 19th, I think.
Right. I understand that.
Your list that we're presenting.
Yes, I understand that clearly. The only thing I can suggest at this point is that when we get to any item, if we can gain a consensus that that item should be moved up or down without a vote, because I'm not supposed to actually, that's my instructions from the co-chairs, I'm not supposed to bring anything to a vote.
Consensus.
Then I think we can do that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Before we tend to beat up a little bit too much on ourselves here, I think we also have to kind of carefully look at, and I'll cast my gaze towards the audience, the rankings of the department. And if you look at the bottom-ranked numbers, starting with number 21, 22, 23, 24, and 25, they all have zero. In fact, you could start with number 20, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. Yes, they all have zero general fund. Mm-hmm. So the department placed all non-general fund items at the bottom. So if we kind of take step back from that and say, okay, we might be treating those as a block because they're non-general fund and we're not probably going to be doing a lot in that area. It's something for us to think about, at least, and then look at the remaining ratings where the general fund dollars are and where we might be spending some money. It just gives us a slightly different perspective to think about.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think, yes. Yes, Representative Jensen.
Thank you. Share a little bit the concern that Representative March has. I'm not sure what all the rationale of the Chancellor's Office was in making their ratings, but I for one, am deeply disappointed at the rankings, some of the rankings that were just, referenced by the representative in relationship to programs in mention. And I think because this happens to be the, because some of these happen to be the ranking of the department, if we were going to rely on the rankings of the department, all of this exercise and a lot of the other things that we do in the Ways and Means process would be unnecessary. Nobody sent me down to Salem to agree with all of the state agencies, whether it's in Ways and Means or whether it's in policy.
Understood. One of the difficulties, I guess there was for it a misunderstanding in terms of directions. This is actually a very new process, in a sense. But one of the difficulties in just if we were going to look at just generally doing what the department did, in a sense, in their rankings, and ranking all non-general fund basically at the bottom. I think we might have another debate in the committee because statewide services generally did better in these rankings than they did in the departments. And I don't think that was intentional by the department. I'm not talking about all. I'm just talking about those that are not not general fund dollars. Those were ranked. The ones that were ranked general fund dollars were ranked generally higher. But I'm just saying that we couldn't make just a unilateral and move everything to the bottom and not have another debate here in the committee about the ranking of statewide services. So, if there is no one that wants to make a case, I guess the case would be for lowering that single ranking. I haven't heard anybody for raising it into engineering and debt service. And now's the time to make your case.
So, on which one? Okay.
The we were on education general non-limited. So no one make. Here, can we go on to small school funding?
Sure.
Which is, I assume, the regionals.
It is the regionals. And it's additional funding that is provided to the four smaller campuses beyond what they would get based primarily, you know, entirely on their enrollment levels. So these are, and there is some explanation here in the material that higher ed provided to you on the first page of their list. There are actually three components of the small school funding, but they distribute additional funds to OIT, Western, Eastern, and Southern Oregon universities. And these are designed to address issues of higher costs per student because these smaller campuses are not able to realize the economies of scale that the larger campuses are in terms of their costs and operations. Small school funding turned out to have an identical average rating with the research function. The research function here, we spoke about research when we talked about the non-limited. And I do want to stress again that the non-limited programs are not, the legislature doesn't indicate how much will be spent in those, but that doesn't mean that the programs are not valuable in what they do. It's just because of the types of funding that they receive. We really don't include any general fund to support them, and we really have no control over those amounts, direct control over those amounts of funds. The research here is something that does provide general fund support for research, and these funds are used primarily as matching funds for researchers to when they need matching funds for federal grants or grants from other sources, and also to provide funds for establishment of laboratories, and in some cases there may be monies here for recruiting researchers. But these are support that goes to the institutions to support the research functions.
Okay. Any debate about these two items? Hearing none, can we go on to the fifth item?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And with your indulgence, I'd like to combine five and six a little bit here. Five are the three statewide public service programs, Agricultural Experiment Station, Extension Service, and Forest Research Laboratory. It's their non-limited part of their budget. And you ranked all of those identically. You ranked the same three programs identically for their limited budget, but at a slightly lower level. The difference here between the limited and non-limited programs for these statewide public services are the limited programs are the funding that the state provides in general fund in support of these activities, as well as funds that come from the federal government or for the extension service. They're also coming from local governments, county governments, that are combined and are used to basically finance the ongoing costs of these statewide public service programs. Those are the limited portions. The non-limited portion is primarily, again, research grants that the faculty of these statewide public services are successful in acquiring on a competitive basis, that are issued on a competitive basis. So that is the difference between the limited and the non-limited portions of these budgets. But again, in all cases, these were ranked, these are sort of ranked together, and they are ranked equally by you. The three statewide public services are ranked equally, and they're ranked together at this point in your subcommittee ranking.
Would, for the sake of maybe clarity, would the committee have an objection to ranking all of these items, both limited and non-limited, as five?
I kind of like them presented separately, in that we might be looking for trimming somewhere a little bit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that generally keeps them all in the same. They're still in the same.
They're still in the same.
Same group. Mm-hmm. So I don't have consensus, but I have.
Could be adding something.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I would like to offer an amendment to Mark's comment, and he used the word trim. I would like to, and that's probably appropriate in relationship to things like the extension service, but I'd like to add fatten up a little bit.
Okay, and I think I have another debate at the other end of the table. So,
Mr. Chair, I would say that given that we all rank this the same, that means the urban folks felt it was important as the rural folks. So I'm hopeful that you sense that.
I think that, in fact, as far as things like the extension services, the urban folks, have all of the same opportunities, and in fact their services are frequently heavily used by some of the urban folks. So I think that that argument falls down a little bit, and it also falls down when some of the urban folks, the gentry of the urban you know, have things like horses that are their toys that they have. We appreciate the urban position on this, but we believe that that this is something that is, as it is stated, statewide, not rural.
I understand that, Representative Jensen, but typically in this building, as you know, that becomes a rural-urban issue.
I'd like to break that down, Senator.
I would like to do that, too.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
We will then move on to item 7.
I do. We actually did. I did not mention the last of the item 6s, which is building maintenance statewide. That's related to the statewide public services, but it's actually funding for Oregon State University's maintenance of those facilities. But it's a separate item, and you rank that with the others. Okay, to number 7. There are two items under number 7. The first is $1 million that is added to the base budget in the governor's budget for faculty recruitment and retention to address issues of providing additional compensation to faculty in order to help recruit and retain existing faculty. That's $1 million addition to the base budget. The other item that was ranked as a number 7, in which a number of you indicated a question mark that it wasn't clear to you what this was. Yeah. These are campus public service programs, and what they are is funding for certain campus activities that are not directly related to their general degree instructional programs. Most of the campuses, or all of the campuses, really have some of these campus public service programs. I do not have a complete list here with me today, but some of the campus public service programs, some of the larger ones, would be the Center for Population Research at Portland State, the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab at Oregon State, Regional Service Institutes at Eastern and Southern Oregon Universities, and the Labor Economic Research Center at the University of Oregon. There's also Jefferson Public Radio at Southern Oregon University, and there are other ones as well. But this is funding that the state provides in order to support these services.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Faculty recruitment and retention, it pains me a little bit that this came in at number 7 in committee, and it also pains me that it came in number 7 in the chancellor's ranking. Though this, you know, we might take some thing in that we were both in agreement on this, if that's the only one in here, I haven't paid that much attention to it. But just to quickly, and I'm not necessarily proposing that we go through, we re-rank this, or that you re-rank this, Mr. Chair, but I'd like to have my opinions noted to the co-chairs that I think this is a mistake. I think maybe of all of the things we have in the higher education budget, it may be one of the most important, if not the most important, in order to maintain the type of quality institutions that we all want. It is imperative that we recruit and retain the highest quality and caliber of faculty that is possible. And $1 million, in fact, seems like perhaps a rather small figure there to me. So that's just, you know, one of the real burning issues, I guess, as far as I'm concerned on this.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I really appreciate the statements from Representative Jensen, and I just want to be identified with everything he said.
I would concur with Representative Jensen. The co-chairs watch these occasionally, particularly during this week. And, I mean, my expectation is that while this committee may be given a number for higher education, maybe it will be $685 for $458. Maybe it will be some different number. But this committee, because this committee is listening to the people that are coming before this committee is getting all the material, this committee should be the ultimate recommender of how that $685+ million or whatever it is being spent, if the co-chairs are listening.
Mr. Chair, I would support wholeheartedly your statement.
Yes.
You're on that, and I believe that.
And you will see that I will prevail on that as long as I am in this position.
Mr. Chair.
Which is...
Mr. Yeah. Chair. I would like to know, I have a notebook, and in the tab marked 2005-2007 budget detail, the Oregon University System writes, faculty recruitment and retention is critical to supporting two of the board's highest priorities. One, preserving and enhancing academic excellence in OUS, and two, promoting economic development through research. So it's critical, but it only got ranked 7. 7's not that bad out of 25, but they see it as critical, as do the rest of us, I think. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
No further comments. We'll move on to capital construction. And Mr. Bender?
These are the funds in the governor's budget for the construction of new capital facilities and for renovations and of existing facilities and addressing deferred maintenance issues. And this came in ranked number 8. Yes, it was number 8. 8th in your listing here. It had a unique ranking. The next item is actually, in terms of dollar amounts, the smallest on this list. The collaborative programs. There's actually really just one collaborative program left that is funded here, and that is the collaborative programs with Oregon, with OHSU in nursing at their regional programs at OIT, Eastern, and Southern Oregon University. this is some additional funding that not only OHSU doesn't receive this funding, but this is funding that goes to those regional campuses to help support their share of the costs in the collaborative nursing programs on their campuses. The next item. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm just looking to see if any member. Yes.
Just a point of clarification on the collaborative programs. This is the. Is there any of this money that is that directly goes out to the other schools other than OHSU? Or this doesn't go out to OHSU?
It does not.
It goes to the other schools.
It goes to those three.
Southern or Eastern.
And all.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Other services non-limited.
Other services non-limited, which is four members indicated that they weren't sure what this was. This is a very large amount of money, $946 million, and what it consists of are those activities that are operated on an auxiliary basis by higher ed. So it includes, for example, housing facilities, dining facilities, student health services, other student activities that are supported by student student fees. These are the types of activities that are included here, and they are non-limited in the budget in that the state does not provide any direct general fund support for them. They are financed entirely by the fees that they generate. Others would be parking and that type of thing.
Okay. Any discussion? Fee remission equity?
Fee remission equity is a small, relatively small program in the OUS budget. It is not the fee remissions which you've heard a lot about. That is to say, this is not the amount of discount that the campuses are providing to students in the form of fee remissions. What this is a funding that's distributed to some of the campuses to deal with transition from the old BAS model and the fact that they weren't all providing the same level of fee remissions. So it's basically a small redistribution of funding between campuses relating to their fee remission programs.
Okay. Any discussion?
Just a quick question. Where does the other fee remissions come in the budget here?
They are not shown in this list because they are not considered an expenditure. Instead, they are a reduction in the amount of revenue that the universities receive.
I understand.
So it just doesn't show up in this particular listing, which shows expenditures directly.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
For later, or perhaps for now, would like to hear more or have a better understanding of the meaning of transition strategy. What if those funds were not available? What would be the impact?
Okay, we'll get that in place too. The next is OSU Cascades.
Yes, the Cascades campus of Oregon State University receives funding not based on its doesn't receive any of the funding in any of these other categories. All of their funding comes through the OSU Cascades line item here, which shows about $6.8 million in general fund in the governor's budget for that campus.
So they're not, excuse me, Mr. Chair, they're not part of undergraduate education, 286
That's correct.
Representative Jensen, I have had a discussion with the chancellor that they should have. Now I know there's some technical difficulties with this, but they probably would have been better under undergraduate education than where they are, because that is clearly what they are, is undergraduate and graduate education. And while they do have some costs in terms of physical facilities that could be accounted for elsewhere, I don't think that we should actually be debating here PSU over U of O or OSU over OIT.
No.
So that's generally how Representative March and then Representative Wisnant.
Is, Mr. Chair, in light of this discussion, partly, and partly in light of the history of this institution and the whole question that when it was brought up, whether this was the proper model or whether using the Eastern Oregon at Southwestern Community College was the proper model, I think that this item needs to be, you know, revisited and moved up to some degree. I mean, one, if we were dealing with it as another small campus, it would have some funds in the small school funding formula line. If we were dealing with it as another small campus, it would have some funds in both the undergraduate and graduate education, as you're discussing. I would, at this point, I'd like to see it moved up at least to say a number four with the small school funding, or a seven, you know, somewhere between that range, four and seven, to reflect reality.
Yeah. Representative Wisnant, then Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank my colleague, Mr. Marsh. I think everyone on this committee, but Senator Wisnant and myself, are the ones that approved this creation of this campus and also the commitment to fund it. This is actually under what they requested for their funding. I'm sorry to see Mr. Sager's not in the audience today from the governor's office. I would have brought the press clippings from his visit to Ben last week when he said this was one of his highest priorities.
I have them in my notebook if you want.
And, well, I think hopefully the committee has seen them. I think, as Representative Marsh said, if we're going to have small school funding up there at number four and undergraduate at number one, you know, I guess I can take back to my friends, at least we're more higher priority than the chancellor's office in the list. So. But I would hope that that this group will work together and find the funding for the Cascade campus. I'm sure that I think there is a commitment here by the legislature when they created the campus that will, because it's growing pains when you're that young. And so I'm not sure, you know, whether we can put it in there, how it's going to be done, but it has to be addressed because it takes growing pains to grow a new school. And the governor thinks it's important. We think it's important in Central Oregon. I'm sure the committee will do that, give us due consideration during the testimony.
Would there be strong objection from the committee to moving it to a number four, yes, along with small school funding research?
I wouldn't support that move.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have no objection to doing that, but it does occur to me that, you know, one of the things we're struggling with on the public safety side is whether there should be a prison, a new prison constructed. And when you look at the investment that is required here versus the investment that would be required, again, to build a new prison, it just lays out for us in very stark terms what our choices are. And it's just a stark example of how difficult
Senator Gordley,
exercises.
Senator Gordley, from a standpoint of capital, this is not capital, but from a standpoint of capital compared to the cost of Madras, it's probably like, I could just guess, 6 or 7%. From the standpoint of operating, it's probably 15% of the operating cost for Madras and Hawaii. Yes.
Well, the Senator Gordley brought up some good points, and it is difficult. But I think Senator Gordley and I have been together enough. We talked about I'm spending as much time with her as I am my wife because we're on two committees together. Not, and I think she supports access. And access in Central Oregon, the fastest growing community in our state, is important, and we need to think that. And I have confidence and trust in this group that we'll look at this when we get into phase two.
It's access, but also equity of opportunity.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I wouldn't support moving it up to four. And I'll be quite frank, I did not give this a high ranking because I disagree with the governor, and I frankly think the governor shocked the State Board of Higher Education. They were not looking at making this an eighth campus. It is a branch campus. We barely have the money to fund what we have. And I'm not looking at expanding that campus. I'm looking at maintaining it. But I'm certainly not interested in expanding it at this time. We can't afford that in our university system right now. We can barely fund what we've got. And we have a lot of other needs in the state. And if we maintain it as a branch campus and we keep it where it is, we still provide access. You've got a university in Senator Witt's district, which is just to the south. There's an Eastern Oregon campus further east. You've got campuses here. I just don't want to pour a bunch of money into creating an eighth university. I'm sorry, I'm just not there.
Senator Walker, are you finished?
I am finished on my soapbox.
Yes. Okay. That was meant as a positive comment, just to check to see if he was Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I would like to, for the committee, correct some geography. It is further for the students from the representative's district to go to Eastern Oregon University than it is for them to go to either of the three major universities located on this side of the Cascades. It is further for me in Pendleton to go to Bend than it is to come to Salem. So access in this respect is certainly somewhat limited as far as the people in Eastern Oregon. I agree with the comments of some of the comments of the good senator from Eugene. I think one of the things that probably hurt this in terms of ranking is somewhat the confusion of being down here, somewhere all by itself, with perhaps not an understanding on everybody's part about the fact that they didn't fall into any of the funding. It looked like on the surface to me that this was additional funding over and above what, and I understand, Representative, understand more about it now than perhaps I did, and maybe that was my error in not pursuing that that topic a little bit. I would like to we all understand it at this point, so we're okay with it. But I would like to ask the Chancellor's Office and the process in the future budgets that come up to maybe make this a little clearer if it needs to continue to be two line items or to put it all in the, as much as I want to defend Eastern Oregon University and support Eastern Oregon University, it's terribly difficult for me to say, oh, let's get some more money for Eastern Oregon University out of the OSU campus in Bend. Since they are not part of the other, that would be basically what I'd be doing. So I would not want to do that.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Senator Nelson had a comment.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just my view of this is that, illustrating the hard choices we have to make. I mean, they're all good, worthy programs. Where do we get the most impact on a statewide basis? And so I have a hard time putting that ahead of things of the statewide services, because they are statewide services. So that's what I'm struggling with. I mean, I understand we all have our competing interests here, but I would have difficulty to move it in front of the statewide services.
One comment that I would have is that in this particular line item for OSU Cascades, it is the operational costs for that facility, I would believe, for both physical plant, faculty, et cetera. There's nothing in there about an expansion. There is nothing even before the committee in any budget about an expansion of the OSU Cascades campus. Where does the committee want to leave this? To leave this here or to continue to discuss it? Or hearing the comments, I do not know where some members would be if we merely... I would think it should be at least ranked at the level of collaborative programs, to be honest.
I would make that suggestion. I was going to actually make that suggestion, Mr. Chair. I would be willing to move it up that far. I would not put it ahead of capital construction, because actually, for me, capital construction should be higher.
Yeah. Is there consensus on the committee to do that? We will do that.
Because, Mr. Chair, I rank sports section water dead last, and that's where it ought to be.
I'm not sure that I would concur with that. I do appreciate my colleague from Calvert's comments about the statewide public services. And as those of you who've known me from previous session will recognize, that that's been one of my, you know, really pet areas to promote. I could make the same argument about small schools being ahead of the statewide public services. And even though I run some risk, I'd still like to put it on equal footing in this case with the other. Even though I understand the senator's point that it's a branch campus, I'd like to put it on somewhat the same footing with the other small schools.
Could I suggest this? If we move it to 9 with other collaborative programs, doesn't mean it means it's the same as other collaborative programs. I will note the committee's discussion on this issue, being that there are some members that believe that it should be moved higher on the list. There are some members that believe this is where it should be on the list. At the same time, keeping in mind that all we are probably going to get from the co-chairs is a number for higher ed, and we will be debating each of these items ad nauseum.
So don't do it now.
No, I would go along with deck chair number 9.
Okay. Okay.
Good deal.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Senator Whitson has a question.
Yes.
I would weigh in on that. Cascade campus is a little higher. I would agree with Representative Jensen on that. And I was just doing some crunching some numbers here. If we might go back to the other services, non-limited, for just a moment.
Yeah.
That computes out to about $650,000 for FTE. And I was wondering if we might,
we can come back to that.
Maybe we should look at that a little closer.
Yeah, we'll look at that in phase two, but I assume that a lot of that is...
I didn't see it addressed. I actually got into your notebook over there. I don't really see that addressed in the notebook either.
Senator Whitson, when we get the full budget from OSU, which we should have in phase two, I would assume.
Oh, yes.
We will have a lot of detail. Will you be able to find out everything that's in that $1,282,000,000?
Okay.
WUE. I assume that's the new.
What the WUE is, a Western Undergraduate Exchange. This is funding that campuses receive for the students that they serve under this program. This is a program under which non-residents are admitted into OSU programs and are only charged 1.5 times the in-state tuition rate. This is less than campuses typically receive from an out-of-state student, because the typical rate is much more than 1.5 times the in-state rate. So this provides some supplemental funding to campuses that are enrolling these students and who are giving them a discount under the Western Oregon undergraduate exchange program in terms of non-resident tuition.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know there's probably a lot of support for ranking this fairly low. That wasn't my my ranking of it, as you probably are aware. But I have a question that if I can ask
yes.
you to of the Chancellor on this. And I think Mr. Bender's, I understand Mr. Bender's explanation, but I believe there's a term exchange in there. And, you know, we have Oregon students leaving the state to go to some of these states for some of the programs that we don't have. And I'm curious about what kind of equity we have, because while we're talking about this in terms of our universities and the money for our universities, what we're really talking about is how much money is the state of Oregon willing to pay for the education of their young people. And if we don't have the programs in the state, you know, then do we lose some of this reciprocity? Are we on the short end of the stick now, or is it about a 50-50 thing, or are we benefiting from it? That's my and I didn't hear that discussion before.
Yeah, Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen again, George Pernsteiner. Week before last, in one of the responses, and I don't have it with me, we gave you information about how many students come into Oregon, I think it's about 1,250, and then how many go out from Oregon, I think it's about 1,500. So at the moment, there have been years in which we have had more students come than go. Right now we're in a situation where more are going out of state from here under the program than we are accepting. But it is... at last. See, if I talk long enough, then somebody will give me the actual data. In 2004, we had 1,510 students go to other states, and 1,210 came to Oregon under this program. From 2000 until 2002, it actually was the other way, where we had more students coming in than going out, and then the lines crossed in 2003. So we can provide this again. It was in one of the attachments a couple of weeks ago. Most of these programs are programs we don't have. That's why it's under the exchange. And the students are choosing then to go to one of the other western states, and or we receive from other states where they don't have programs. And it's a program that most of the western states are part of, but the big ones like California are not.
Yeah. But we still have it with Colorado.
Yeah, I think Colorado's one of them, Idaho, Nevada, North Dakota. I mean, it goes a little bit further east than you might think.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Chair Devlin?
Yes.
Chancellor Pernsteiner, does this WUE program replace the WICHE program, the Western Interstate Compact for Higher Education?
It is a part of the WICHE arrangement, and it was the undergraduate portion. We used to have monies that went directly into a WICHE program, and we don't do that any longer. We now just have the undergraduate portion, the undergraduate exchange portion. I think it was, I don't know which session it was that went away. Does anybody remember? It was several years ago.
Mm-hmm. Senator Wilson.
Allow me an anecdote. I mean, that's what allowed me to go to veterinary school, was the Western Interstate Compact for Higher Education. They paid, you know, there was a swap of out-of-state tuition for in-state tuition, and I went to Washington State, and somebody from Washington went to dental school, you know. But, I mean, it was, it's about access a lot. And I think that's something that we should, when we were ranking that, we should consider that it allows access to some areas of education that aren't provided for in Oregon that people can't, some people can't afford to go to if they don't have this relief.
Mr. Chair, you know, I'm not going to at this point, hang up our discussions on this, but to note that I really would kind of like to see this be a little bit higher as we get down into the phase so that we do wind up, because I do think this program serves the students of the state of Oregon very well. The senators mentioned the veterinary medicine school a few years ago when we had to go out of state. Not too many years ago, I had a student wanting to go into physical therapy, and there wasn't a program in state other than a private school, and it was an application that it was that through that that this student was able to get their physical therapy education. So,
thank you,
Mr. Chair. Yeah. I would just say I rank that high in my ranking, if I recall, because I think the program is valuable. But we can have that discussion in phase two.
Thank you very much, committee. I think central services and sports action are pretty self-evident. I would give the chancellor some consolation in the fact that he had a lottery program rate lower.
Even though that's money given to us.
It's not free money.
But you are not unique in this. In every committee I'm in, sort of central administration usually is very low, if not at the bottom. With that, are there any objections to moving away from the Oregon University system and to OHSU? With that, I will close the hearing on 5513, open the hearing on 5522, the Oregon Health Sciences University. Colleagues, this is, by comparison, a relatively simple document. As you can see, we have 1-1, 1-2, 3-3s, 2-4s, and 1-5.
Want to close the hearing?
Any discussion on the School of Nursing? Okay. The second item is the School of Medicine. I would go to Mr. Bender, but most of these are pretty self-explanatory. I will say for the record that the discussion clearly in committee is going to be on the School of Medicine. I've had this discussion with at least the co-chair on the Senate side on whether or not we continue to offer a lower rate of tuition for Oregon residents. That is basically the core of the discussion for the School of Medicine. Any objections to or any statements to change the ranking for the School of Medicine? Hearing none. Now we have area health education centers, School of Dentistry, and the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center. Again, to highlight for the committee, and I know that the committee is aware of this, the issue is similar for the School of Dentistry in terms of whether to maintain a lower level of tuition for Oregon residents that are at the School of Dentistry. And I know that the committee has expressed, they're interested in all of these items, but I've heard a lot of comments about the area health education centers. Committee members and from outside the committee also. Any additional comments? Any desire to move any of the rankings? It's maybe the shortest. The next set of rankings are for the OHSU Hospital and Clinics and debt service on state revenue. The only thing that I would recommend here is, if it's okay with the committee, that we, as we have done with everything else, we move debt service to being a number one also in the priority.
I don't have institutional memory on this one, obviously. I don't have any institutional memory. But it seems to me that there was some type of an agreement with OHSU that if the state provided them the bonding potential that to increase their capacity, that they would handle the hospital themselves.
And Senator Whitson, I believe they are handling the hospital themselves. I guess the debate is over some of the other programs that may serve their purposes but serve statewide purposes also. And so that's the crux of another discussion that we will have in committee. Yes.
Just a comment with that. My understanding of what the original agreement back in 95 was is that they would allow Oregon Health Science University to do these different things. Oregon Health Science University would not come in for at least two sessions and ask for any additional funds. But there was nothing that was connected to the structure. Maybe it was three cycles, I can't remember. But there was a period of time where Oregon Health Science University said, we will not come back and ask for general funds if you give us this. But there, as far as I know, there was nothing. There was no agreement.
Increase in
general funds. So they did not come back, and they lived up to their agreement. They did not come back and ask for any increase in general funds. And that was, like $100 or $104 million or something like that. But I don't recall anything in my memory of being tied to any capital construction, because that capital construction didn't come in until 2001.
Okay. Any additional discussion?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I've lost where you're at.
Oh, we are on all the number fours, basically.
All the number fours?
Yeah, in the shaded column.
Well, obviously I've gotten behind on this. So.
Oregon Opportunity Debt Service number four into number one.
One, because it's a debt service and we have tradition. We have about a four-day tradition. We have a four-day tradition of moving all debt service.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could we hear again for the record the program impacts for the OHSU hospital and clinic? Impacts in terms of the governor's cut?
Yes, if Provost would like to come forward. This is the issue about undercompensated care.
It is. Chairman Devlin and members of the committee, Senator Gordley, Leslie Halleck, for the record, Provost at OHSU. This budget that is listed before you is the governor's recommended budget, and it includes the debt service plus approximately 40% reduction in the rest of the operation of OHSU from the current fiscal year. And in that scenario, essentially, as we allocated the resources, there are no state appropriation dollars allocated to the hospitals and clinics, as you can see. The impact is very complex. The OHSU provides approximately, in this fiscal year, $40 million in over and above the reimbursement it receives for care for Medicaid and uninsured patients. And the amount that's per year, the amount that's been removed from the hospital budget by this budget is $6.841 million per year. And so it was already about 15 to 20% of the loss that OHSU sustained seeing Medicaid patients was covered by the state. So the impact is that it exacerbates that loss. But the loss was already, 80% of the loss was already there. So I think what it does is forces the question, as you've actually raised in the hearings, that a forum needs to be convened of all the health systems in the metropolitan area to really tackle this issue of how that care is going to be provided.
What's the impact on the community? What would be the immediate impact? What would not happen as a result of...
It really is very hard for us to say. We are making every effort to sustain the care for the patients that are already in our system. Priorities at the moment are for children, first and foremost, both in Dornbecker and in CDRC, for women and the OBGYN program, for example. But as we look across the needs out a few years, all predictions are they're going to increase, and we will not be able to soak that up. We will not be able to accommodate those increases. Can we sustain the care we're now providing? We honestly don't think so. We don't know. We're trying to do that. Part of the expansion of the new patient care facility that's under construction allows us a greater capacity to cover those costs with commercially paying patients. But right now, our projection for fiscal year 06 is a loss of $50 million on Medicaid and uninsured patients, which is up from the $37 million last year. So that's what we're trying to struggle with, is how much of that capacity can we accommodate. And we have quite an extensive set of numbers in the presentation that I'd be happy to go over with you, or we can do it in phase two hearings, that really lines out Medicare patients, Medicaid patients, the OHP patients, the non-sponsored patients, and what those losses are and what those numbers are over time.
Let's do revisit that piece in phase two. In addition, I understand that there was a cut to the Department of Psychiatry, that budget. And if that's accurate, if so, at what level was the cut? And why was that choice made? And again, describe the anticipated community impact in phase two.
In phase two, certainly. Just one brief comment. The School of Medicine, you mentioned the resident tuition issue. There were other cuts. That's an example of one to accommodate the reduction besides the tuition issue in the School of Medicine.
Thank you very much.
And prior to phase two, I would like to get a response to the question I'm raising. I'd like to get that response in writing as quickly as you can prepare it, and please share it with the committee.
Okay. Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, my apologies for stepping out of the room for a minute.
I know, we moved very quickly.
Before we get too far down this road, let me go make note that I find it impossible in my mind to be able to distinguish between or to rank in any type of distinction between the School of Nursing, the School of Medicine, the Area Health and Office of Rural Health, and the School of Dentistry. In my perception of these things, these all deserve the same ranking, and I am somewhat disappointed that our ranking comes out a little differently. I'm also very disappointed at the Oregon Health Sciences rating of ranking of the School of Dentistry as number four. I just am, you know, I realize maybe it doesn't have in some ways some of the pizzazz that some other things have, but in terms of a in terms of health services in our state. I think that's a tragic position for us to have taken, or for the school to have taken on the School of Dentistry. I suspect, and I hate to use these words in a body of this type, but I suspect that's more of a political thing than it is anything else.
Yes. Did you want to respond?
May I?
Yes.
Senator Devlin, Representative Jensen, we couldn't agree more with you. Our preference would have been to rank all three schools with the same number one. We understood the instructions to mean that we did not have that choice. And the reason the School of Medicine was listed as one, remember this is 60% of the operating budget, is that it is the revenue generator for the rest of the programs. And if that isn't sustained, then the rest of the programs can't exist. But our preference was to have all the schools be number one, and we were told we had to put a number 1 through 7 by each, right?
Yeah. Senator, are you finished?
Well, I would somewhat understand your position on that, but I still find it extremely difficult to see this rank down at number 4. In recent years, a number of major achievements, I think, have taken place in the OHSU School of Dentistry. For one thing, they have added a pediatric dentistry, which was, for some of us, who were around, one of my soapboxes in my first couple of sessions here on campus, introduced a bill to do that, and thought I had achieved a major accomplishment when I got the Ways and Means to appropriate a dollar to that, just to keep it alive so that we could eventually work to. And as far as health care is concerned for young people, they're probably short of vaccines. There are probably few things that are more important in health care prevention than pediatric dentistry.
Yeah, I agree completely.
So,
Senator Whitsitt and Senator Gourley.
Thank you, Chair Devlin. I wonder if you could put some figures together for the committee, at least for myself, on the average number of hours worked per day or week by dentists and dental hygienists as compared to physicians, RNs, and associate nurses. And I think that's, in a way, in my mind, it sort of speaks to the need for those professionals. It's my sense that the physicians and RNs work a lot more hours in a week than do the dentists and the dental hygienists. And
we'd be happy to provide those.
Senator Gourley.
It has been pointed out that by others that the choices we face are that they're moral choices, and that in fact a budget document is a reflection of moral choices. And what strikes me about the placement of the OHSU hospital and clinics on the institutions list, and then looking at our own list, is that when you look at where services to the poor are delivered, we're placing them at the bottom again. And so we need to reflect on that, and that is going to be a continuing concern of mine, which the institution has heard before, in terms of its overall mission, core mission, which includes providing services to the poor. I'm just reflecting on again, it's a reflection on the morality of what we're doing, and the values that are also reflected in the choices that we make.
Chair?
Yes. Senator Nelson?
Thank you. I thought our charge here was to look at successful programs and then basically reward them. This program does the human health care throughout the state, has education component, has a research component, and it's statewide. And I know that some people are, there are some questions, and the co-chair on the Senate side is somewhat critical of this organization, but I mean, I'm looking at a situation that touches everybody in this committee. And early on, we were talking about enhancing programs. I mean, this is a program that's very successful. We need to be looking at restoring and enhancing some of these things. I mean, because this is going to create jobs, too. That's something we haven't talked about. I mean, healthcare is one of the biggest job creators we have in the state right now. And it's not going to get, I mean, that's not going to change. In fact, that's going to be enhanced, I would say, probably. And it's going to touch me in Eastern Oregon. It's going to touch Senator Gardley in Portland, Representative March, and everybody. It's going to get to. So if our overall charge in this whole thing is to look at successful programs on a statewide basis, and if we have to make hard choices, to me, this is not a hard choice. I put all of these things as one. I think this is something we should just, this is something you should restore and enhance and improve it. So that's where I'm coming down on this particular item.
With that, we will move on to item number 5, if there's no objections. And item number 5 is the Oregon Poison Center. And I don't really think it's probably necessary at this point to give a further explanation of it, but I would like to point out to the committee, in terms of history, I spent an entire session trying to preserve the Oregon Poison Center, even to the point of threatening to take 911 funds to do it, I think, which...
Very brave. Very brave.
Can I ask just a question?
Yes.
Is this the CROET program? How is it? How is
no.
It, this is something different. Could you explain how this is different?
Chairman Devlin, Senator Nelson, it is different from the CROET, but it does benefit from the fact that the CROET is there. CROET is a Center for Research on Occupational and Environmental Toxicology. It's actually a research institute, but it also plays a role via workman's comp funding in delivering information about workplace toxins and environmental toxins. And we have a unique poison center model. The poison center is actually embedded in the emergency room in the Department of Emergency Medicine, and it's a 24/7 call center for individuals who've been exposed, swallowed something, taken in something, been exposed, they're exposed to something and they think they've been poisoned and they call.
Madam Provost, can you mention that it's a statewide center?
And it's a statewide, it's in fact, we now have a contract with Alaska, Guam, and Nevada, so we actually have a regional center. But what's unique about it, and our call cost is less than half of most call centers, is that they use nurse practitioners to answer the phone who have been trained in toxicology in concert with the expertise in the CROET, which is a toxicology center, which is a big resource for those individuals. So we benefit from its existence. But the call center is really staffed by nurses 24/7.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would like to know what the how you would look at options for providing the service were the funds to go away.
We had a lot of discussion of that in the last session. Our options, and we have looked very hard at that, if we contract, if the state were to contract, or anyone was, with another call center, it would cost quite a bit more if you could find someone to take it. We had a brief period of time where we had a strike, and our staff were not there, and we had to contract out, and it cost us about 2.5 times the cost of doing it ourselves. Because we have this cost-effective model. So either the service would go away and people wouldn't have a resource to call when they ingested something, or it would cost more.
Let me ask the question differently. were the funding to cease, would OHSU walk away from this commitment? That's the question.
I see. You know, that's a really hard question. There is no reimbursement stream for this function. So it would have to come at the expense of something else. It either would reduce the capacity to care for people who can't pay. I mean, it would. There's no revenue stream that supports it other than this. So, you know, if we chose to do that, then we would have to stop doing something else, and that would be a hard call to make.
And have you looked at what else you would stop doing if these funds went away?
Well, you'd have to stop doing something that doesn't have a revenue stream. I mean, it would have to, and that really amounts to the public mission.
I'd like you to come back in phase two and give a more definitive answer.
Sure.
To what
certainly
you do in the absence of the funds.
Representative March.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me clarify your last statement, and maybe you want to bring back information on that. One of the things that we do not have in this budget, as we have in other budgets, are the OHSU's other resources. So when we look at total funds, we're only looking at the state's share of total funds. And you just said that you contract with Alaska, Guam, and
Nevada.
I presume you're not contracting with them for $0.
Right.
So when you say there's no other funding for this, let's clarify that there is other funding for it, just not provided by the state.
Right, not for Oregon calls. And Representative Marsh, we have submitted all that material. It isn't on this sheet, but in our budget submissions to the executive branch and in material we've given Senator Devlin and Senator Walker, all of our material is there. We'd be happy to provide that for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to comment. My question was not argumentative in the sense that I just want us to understand that this is a different budget than other budgets.
Right.
And I certainly wouldn't want to put Mr. Ugg out of business. Mr. Ugg may want to move up and to at least a four in the chair's mind or higher. But it's a good program. Thank you.
For the committee, in our debate last year, it is kind of odd that a lot of that debate occurred in the Public Safety Committee. And that's because Representative Patridge and I were threatening the possibility of using 911 funds. And we could make a clear nexus to 911 because most 911 centers refer calls directly over to the Poison Control Center. Obviously, no 911 centers want to give up any funds. But it's interesting that I think in one of those debates, and this is a question whether you'd ever want to have this debate again in this building, we had one 911 center spokesman saying, well, we rarely call the Poison Control Center. We have a listing of procedures, and so when someone calls, we go through that list of procedures. Well, what's the background of that individual? Well, they're an emergency, I forget the proper name, but they are an emergency dispatch operator. They've had about a few weeks of training. And we asked, have you ever thought about the potential liability of your 911 center for not referring those calls onto the Poison Control Center? So, I mean, we can have that debate again this year if people want to have it. We can fill this room with.
Let's have it. Mr. Chair, I was there when you were involved in that, and I'd never supported this legislature stealing 911 funds for other purposes, which they were used for entirely different purposes than what 911 is for.
Yeah.
But I wasn't opposed to that. It was the other purposes. I rank this Poison Control Center much higher. We're all free to rank it where we are, but as a mother of two children who called the Poison Control Center at least on three occasions when they were little, it's a valuable service.
Yeah.
And I think Representative Marks's points are well taken, that there is some extra funding and maybe there's some way they can even get more extra funding by contracting with other states. But there's still going to be some costs.
Yeah.
to the program.
For the committee, the reality here is going to be that I would assume the co-chairs, this is not the Oregon University system, this is OHSU. They will give us a number for OHSU, and we will try to do what we think is best within that number. And then we, if we don't believe we are doing good enough, we will be arguing with the co-chairs if we need more resources. That's the basic discussion that we will be having. Is there any move by the committee to change any of the rankings? Hearing none. Thank you very much, Madam Provost. And I will close the hearing on SB 5522. You will be distributed later today. I cannot talk about this too much because we can't get into a debate here on things that are not before the committee. But you will be distributed today.
Mr. Chair, in my committee, people whose cell phone goes off in committee, even after I've warned them, have to make a contribution to the common school fund. And currently, that's up to about $1,500 this week. And as we get closer into the session, it's much greater.
Okay. Anyway, going back, you will receive... later today, from our discussion yesterday, the community college and workforce development priority list that we talked about, which was literally everything is a one except for a couple, and the OSAC, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission priority list. If you have any strong objections to that list, anything on that list, please let me know. That will be the list that will be going on to the co-chairs, and as soon as we get these completed, you'll receive those also in the same communication from that. And many of you may not be here tomorrow, but so you need to communicate. I will be here tomorrow, and I might be back here on the weekend. If I have to come back here on the weekend, Mr. Bender has to come back here on the weekend, but I don't think that's going to be necessary unless we have to do a lot more than I'm envisioning.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, my understanding is that I'll be distributing the revised priority lists based on your discussions today to members today for not only community colleges and OSAC, but also for the two that you did that you discussed today. And I will probably be able to get that to you later in the afternoon. If any of you are going to be leaving early, just let me know and I'll try. Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll be here tomorrow, Mr. Bender, for noon.
Okay.
Okay, I will try to find out when people are leaving.
And if you could get any comments back to me today, we did distribute after some discussion. We did distribute our revised state school. Well, we did not revise the state school fund. That stayed exactly the same.
Okay.
But our revised Oregon Department of Education. And I haven't heard any strong objections from anyone on that revision. So... So that's where we'll leave that. And all those materials will be going to the co-chairs on probably, if we can get them out, they'll go out on Friday, so we'll be a few days early. So Mr. Bender and I won't have to come in on the weekend. Yes.
Mr. Chair, since you brought it up in just the last discussion about telling the co-chairs we need more money, I think you might as well start that discussion now. We need more money.
I'll note that.
Turn on the printing machine.
Yes.
What about Monday?
Monday. Oh, that's Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could ask you please to take one of these and pass them down. This is a schedule for the subcommittee for Phase 2. And starting on Monday, which would be the week of March 28th to April 1st, you can see that the items that you have scheduled for Monday are a couple of health-related licensing boards, the Oregon Board of Dentistry and the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners. And
Ms. Minner, a comment on that. We will be doing those on every Monday. And as we complete those hearings on a Monday, if at all possible, the following Monday, we will be bringing them back for a work session. If there is a problem, we might be waiting a couple of weeks to correct the problem. But our intent is to basically complete all of those health licensing commissions by the end of Phase 2.
I have one Yeah. Follow-up question. We only have one day for TSPC. Is that correct?
That is correct. There is an issue here that I think we probably do need to discuss, and I'd be happy to entertain a discussion with the committee on it. I'm figuring out a way to say this. If the issue with TSPC is a policy issue, it probably belongs in Senator Walker's committee. If it is a budget issue, it belongs in this committee. But I do think that that's a very limited time to discuss TSPC. So if I can free up a little bit more time in the schedule, we can possibly do that, particularly in terms of coming back for it later in a work session.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I know in the House that there's discussion about whether they should be back under ODE and the fact that they're in a leased building. Now, is that policy or is that...
The leased building is here.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they should be in ODE is there.
It's still a matter whether you fund it out of ODE or you fund it separate.
Yes.
I did not know that was a discussion in the House.
Yeah. But we can have some of that discussion. One of the things we can do is this is the hearing date for TSPC. It is not necessarily the work session date, although this is a budget they've indicated
if
we could get out. So if we need to spend a little bit more time, we can do that. One other thing I'd point out about the health policy commissions, and I think from my previous statements, some of the committee members can tell how endeared I am to health, or not health policy, but health licensing boards. When we come back the following Monday and the Monday after that and the Monday after that, these are not going to be probably the most exciting of hearings. But to move things out, I have to have quorums on from both chambers. So it would be very much appreciated, even though this is not the most exciting of an area. I know it's always been on this side.
He's looking down here.
For the record. For the record. The attendance of the House members of the committee has been, exemplary.
Mr. Chair.
And it's been relatively good for the Senate side.
I would say they're not on as many committees as
okay.
We are.
But anyway,
some of us.
I just wanted to put that on the record that we do, even though these may not be the most exciting of subjects, we do need to have quorums on those days. Mr. Bender, you want to go into the rest of next week.
Please note that you have had distributed to your offices the presentation materials for both of the agencies that you'll be working on Monday. So if you have any questions or problems finding those, please let our office know right away. The remainder of the week on Tuesday will be a day that will be set aside entirely for public testimony on the state school fund and the Department of Education's budgets. And then the remainder of the week and next week, you will be doing your phase two hearings on those budgets Wednesday and Thursday of the following week, which would be April 7th, would be a second day set aside for public testimony from the public on the pre-K through 12 budgets.
I would like to also state we will be having more public hearings than currently what is on the schedule. In terms of the committee itself, probably at least two more. Those have not been scheduled yet, and they will be undoubtedly outside the building and probably outside of Marion County. So we will be working with all of you on those. When we do have the public hearings here in the building, it'll be my preference to follow normal procedures, and that is to give people that have come from more than 100 miles away some preference in terms of the hearing. But also it'll be important, depending upon how many people show up for some of these hearings, and I would guess that in many cases we may fill this room. We will have to limit testimony to probably like 3 minutes if this room is filled to participants. And that our goal is to receive not public testimony, not to debate with the public on their positions. And so I will try to make us as accessible as possible to the public, and that might mean that I will have to move us along so we make sure that we get to as many people in the room as possible that want to testify. So I just wanted to...
And then the following week, we don't really need to do that, but we will still be on the Oregon Department of Education and the state school fund, basically.
Right, for the next 2 weeks.
And
then moving on to community colleges, OHSU, Department of Higher Ed, and OSAC.
So, with that, is there any additional for the good of the committee?
Well, I don't see "sine die" written on here, but
no, it's not written anywhere. If I didn't, I will close the hearing at 55:22, and I will close this committee meeting and see you all on Monday.
Okay, here's my note.